The investigation into what exactly happened in London yesterday is really only just beginning, but the initial impression is of another lone wolf attack, like we saw in Orlando or Nice or Berlin. We've become accustomed to hearing the phrase self-radicalize in connection with these lone wolves. But is that the case? Are they really alone, radicalizing themselves? Earlier, I spoke with Michael S. Smith II, a terrorism analyst who specializes in the influence operations of groups like Al-Qaeda and ISIS. So you've analyzed past attacks and found something that surprised me, that most of these people are groomed one-on-one. Is that right?
Yeah, the Islamic State has rigorously been involved with the development of online communities. They use things like Twitter to identify would-be supporters for the group, and then they begin to use other technologies, encrypted chat apps like Telegram Messenger, to more actively engage with those people to try to build support in such a way that manifests in the resort to violence that we see in events such as the events that unfolded in London yesterday.
So one-on-one, but not face-to-face, or not in the same room, but they're kind of doing it remotely.
That's correct, yes. And in most of the cases, when it comes to attacks like the ones that have occurred in the United States that have been claimed by the group and other attacks in the West, various countries in Europe, you find that those individuals have been corresponding with group members located inside the so-called caliphate.
Yeah, so is the kind of hopeful note of your analysis that if potential attackers need this one-on-one attention to push them over the line into taking action, then there is a possibility that you could break or prevent that connection?
That's very difficult to do. And especially in the case of the exploitation of social media platforms like Twitter to identify the would-be recruits remotely, you find that these companies are not doing everything that they could to increase the risks associated with the exploitations of their technologies to wage what has become the most aggressive and effective recruitment coup incitement program of any terrorist group in history. And what I mean by that is that since early in 2015, the group's members have rigorously promoted the employ of various technologies such as virtual private networks or VPNs, specialized browsers like Tor, which help to mask one's physical location when you're online. Now, Wikipedia prevents people from going on their popular site and defacing pages or issuing terroristic threats online by, you know, denying editorial controls when people are utilizing those technologies. It would be very easy for Twitter and Facebook and other companies to implement similar policies.
I know, Michael S. Smith, because of your work, you've personally received threats from jihadis. What have the threats been, and what do you think this suggests about your understanding of the problem?
Well, a very notable example was a crowdsourced threat campaign against me on Twitter and Telegram Messenger accounts and channels the day before the attack in Orlando. And that's the sort of activity that is really tailored to help stimulate thinking about the ease with which one could go out and execute attacks, as well as the types of targets, terrorism analysts. Sometimes they do the same thing with journalists who report on the group.
I know you've had some disagreements with senior members of the Trump administration over their understanding of terrorism and counterterrorism. So briefly, what do you see as the administration's strengths and weaknesses when it comes to understanding and countering jihadi terrorism right now?
Fortunately, there do remain many very knowledgeable experts and very gifted analysts within our government, despite these high-profile appointments of what you might call subpar talent. There are many talented people in our national security community who are very focused on the very issues that we're talking about right now. And I believe that you will see with this administration an emphasis on doing more to blunt the influence capacity of the Islamic State in particular. So I remain very confident that despite the appointments of people who really have no business working in national security to be advising the president and forming his understandings of the threat environment, that the threat environment is going to continue to evolve in such a manner as to demand more effective countermeasures.
Independent terrorism analyst Michael S. Smith II, thank you very much.
Thank you.
British authorities say that they found no direct links between the suspect in yesterday's attacks, Khalid Masood, and any extremist groups. ISIS has claimed responsibility. New York Times correspondent Rukmini Kalamaki has been monitoring ISIS-linked online channels since the London attack.
They released the claim of responsibility via Amok, which is their newswire. The language says that a security source has informed the Amok news agency. Amok is trying to act like a real news agency and is pretending like they have sources, you know, in the rest of the world. And then it goes on to call him a soldier of the Islamic State. This is a term that they use for both their actual soldiers who are in Iraq and Syria and elsewhere in the caliphate fighting on the front lines for them, and also for anyone that carries out an attack in their name.
Is there any suggestion in the claim of responsibility from ISIS that they actually ordered this specific attack?
It depends on how you define the word ordered. I think that many of our listeners are continuing to rely on what I would call an outdated model of terrorism, namely terrorists who train in the caves in Afghanistan, in Iraq and Syria, and then who are dispatched back to our territories to carry out violence. That is one way that ISIS and other groups are carrying out terror, the Paris attacks being a prime example of that. But that is not the main way that terror attacks are now carried out by the Islamic State. For years now, the Islamic State has been working to put in place a propaganda machine that essentially inspires people to carry out attacks on their own and gives them the tools to do so. So not too long ago, they released a video that showed in gory detail how to use a knife to behead and kill a man. They literally displayed step by step the type of knife you should use, the type of gestures you should use, techniques, etc. And these are accessible to anybody who, like me, has a Telegram account and who figures out how to navigate their channels. So in my opinion, this is a mode of attack that is propagated by ISIS. It's not something that they necessarily directed. We don't know yet. We don't have enough details about this. But I believe that the inspired attacks are still very much part of the ISIS strategy.
What have British authorities said about the attacker?
We know that he's a British-born citizen. He was 52 years old. He has a criminal past, but not a terrorism-related one. We tend to think that because ISIS claims to be a religious group, that if you were involved in drugs or in, you know, some sort of illicit criminal activity, that that would somehow negate the membership to ISIS. In fact, it's just the opposite. ISIS is reaching out to people that have a criminal past, and they're offering them a chance at redemption. They're throwing at them verses from scripture that talk about how a martyr, once he carries out the act of martyrdom, all of his sins are washed away. He enters paradise basically with this new face.
If this was in fact ISIS, would this be their first attack in the UK?
Their first successful one, yes.
Yeah.
There have been numerous foiled attacks, and that too is significant, Marco. They've been threatening the United Kingdom and London in particular in a concerted way, I would say, for about a year and a half. The first time that I really noticed it was in the video that was released claiming responsibility for the Paris attacks. And if you recall, that video had footage of each of the attackers in Iraq and Syria carrying out atrocities, beheadings of prisoners. And that video, at the very end, and cuts to a screen where they warn that their next target is London. Now, that was November of 2015. So all of this time has passed and nothing successful up until now.
How strong is support in the UK for ISIS, for Al-Qaeda, from what you've been seeing online and elsewhere?
Just in terms of the sheer number of foreign fighters that they have sent to Syria, the United Kingdom is almost up there with France. It's basically France, the United Kingdom, and then other European nations, and the other European nations drop off very quickly. Some of the most famous members of ISIS, Jihadi John, for example, the man that decapitated American journalist James Foley, are British. So in terms of the foreign fighters, their numbers are very strong. In terms of those who have returned, we don't know. I don't think that there is an estimate of that. In terms of support for them, I believe that it's one of the stronger places in Europe. And in specific pockets, like Birmingham, which is where this man is from, we know from authorities that there have been pockets of radicalization. Again, it is perplexing to me why there hasn't been a successful attack until now.
Does this attack provide a propaganda boon for ISIS?
Of course. In the last months, most of the news about ISIS has been about their territorial defeats, especially in Mosul. That's a big blow to ISIS, and they've been trying, I've seen on their propaganda how they've been trying to raise morale, on the one hand, by arguing that the territorial caliphate is only one kind of caliphate, you know, that really that the caliphate is an entity that should live on in their hearts. And then also by promising attacks. They've been promising attacks repeatedly in recent weeks. I don't know that they had any foreknowledge, you know, of what was about to happen in London, but at least that's the rhetoric that they're telling their supporters.
New York Times correspondent Rukmini Callimachi, thank you very much.
Marco, thank you. It's always a pleasure.